Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. We have an incredible guest on the Taz and Paula show. We have Tom Kenyon with us today.
Right. He is known for his captivating, almost four-octave sound healing voice around the world, a musician, a researcher, songwriter, author, and therapist. Tom Kenyon holds a master's degree in psychological counseling and has over 25 years' experience in private practice. In the course of his psychotherapeutic work, he began to use sound and music to accelerate the therapeutic process. Recognizing the power of sound as a healing modality, Tom founded Acoustic Brain Research in 1983 to scientifically document the effects of sound and music on consciousness. And in addition, Tom has developed a system of catalytic sound, using his nearly four-octave range voice to assist others in entering deep, altered states of awareness. A large portion of Tom's current work is in the synthesis of internal alchemy as a means to heighten awareness and to develop spiritual illuminations. His latest releases, CD releases, are Lightship, The Golden Orb, Voices from the Other Worlds, The Kala Chakra of Great Compassion. Tom, welcome.
Thank you.
We're so glad to have you with us today, because I know how busy your schedule is. Could you tell our listening audience who the Hawthors are?
You go for the deep end first, huh? Well, the Hathors are an intelligence that is, they describe themselves as existing in between the fifth and twelfth dimensions of consciousness. And they say that we are in, as humans, we are localized in time and space, three dimensions plus time. And they are an intelligence that simply exists at the fifth outside of time, and they say there are other dimensions higher. And so they have a very unique perspective on consciousness and life. And they say that they were involved with the Egyptians in that the golden period of Egypt through the Hathor fertility religion. And they are, but they're not Egyptian, they are intergalactic and actually beings from another universe as far as what they say. So I can have this conversation with you now, but when I first encountered them, I was in private practice in the midst of brain research and very much a rationalist, and I still am biased that way. And they came unbidden and unwelcome because they violated my view of reality. So since then, that's been like 18 years now or something like that, their perspective, whatever their ultimate nature is, I find very helpful, and many other people around the world also find it helpful.
So has this exceeded your wildest dreams of going in a direction you might not have anticipated at the beginning?
Oh, yeah. I thought I was just going to be doing brain research on the effects of sound basically for the rest of my career and had no intention of going around making strange sounds and bringing
do you have
in information
a sound?
From beings from another, you know, universe that was not in my picture.
Now, how did they contact you at the beginning?
It was very strange. I'd come to Washington State from North Carolina, where I had a private practice, and our furniture got lost. The moving company said, "We don't worry, it will show up, but we just don't know where it is right now." And this went on for a week, and so we were in a new house, and so without any office equipment or anything like that, I did a little mini meditation retreat. And I was doing a meditation one afternoon, totally not into this direction at all, but suddenly two of them showed up clairvoyantly. So they all just appear to me clairvoyantly, never physically. In other words, I see it with my inner vision. And one spoke to me, and one was always an observer. And the one who spoke to me started instructing me in the use of sacred geometry in the brain. So I had been doing brain research up to that point for about 7 years, 10 years actually. And so I was very impressed with the information, because when I tested it out, it had an effect that I recognized as significant. But I really had difficulties with who they said they were and where they were from. So it was a tremendous conflict, a collision of paradigms, you might say. And I remember one point where they said, well, we suggest you test this with other people to find out that what we are offering is in fact valid. So I formed 3 beta test sites throughout the Northwest, and I went to these cities and taught the basic technology that they were imparting. And sure enough, everything they said would happen did happen for people. So I began the process of trying to accommodate these beings, who they were, and I still thought of them as maybe archetypal in the Jungian sense, that they were an aspect of my own consciousness. And of course, when you get into this, what I call woo-woo land, which is not to discount it, but it's a very different way of the brain operating. When you get into the right hemisphere aspect of the brain and you open up those doors that are accessible, it gets fuzzy where one ends and something else begins. So, but I came to the conclusion that the technology, the information was extremely valid, and over the course of the years, I have seen them be right about virtually everything they have said. So that's where I'm at in my process with them.
And they give you, they tell you about things that are, or do they tell you about things that are going to happen in the future?
Well, they're very, yes and no. In that they say that there's no, our future is not written in stone. If they say that they can speak of it in terms of probabilities. They say that there are tendencies, but we have free will and we can change our direction at any point.
Terrific.
And so with every communication they have ever given, they have emphasized this, that they believe that our will is one of our greatest gifts. And so they will say they see trends, and they have talked about these. And, you know, one of the trends they talked about 2 years ago, a little bit more than 2 years ago now, was the financial catastrophe that we're involved in now and the ecological acceleration of that's taking place. And they said 2 years ago that they thought it was going to be in about a year, but they put the outside window as now. So they were wrong about, it didn't come as fast as they thought it was, but the outside window, they said, this is the outside window and we are in the outside window. Meaning the outside of the time frame that they gave. And they were absolutely right about the economic deterioration and the acceleration of the melting of the ice caps and the glaciers and everything that's going on right now. So, and they gave that information 2 years ago. And what they do in all of this, when they give a planetary message, it's not so much about, for them, not about the details of what's going to happen, because, as I said, they really do feel, and I feel this too, that we are creating our destiny every moment of our life through the choices we make on an individual level and at a collective level and culturally and in the world. And that we may be heading down, you know, a street, so to speak, but to say, I have difficulty with people who say that the end is here, there's nothing we can do about it. It's like you get a, the other day I was driving and somebody motioned that my tire was getting flat. Well, I could have said to myself, well, there's nothing I'm going to do. I'm going to get a flat tire and I'm going to be stuck. But instead, I go to a service station and put air in it. So the same thing happens in our own personal lives, where we can think that we're headed in a destructive direction, but we have choice at every moment. And our culture is in the same position. So that's really how... when they give information about the details, they always say, never lose sight of the fact that we can change that destiny. And they say at the last moment, at the 12th hour, we can change the destiny.
Ooh, I just got chills.
Well, we're being ruled by fear. And
yes,
do the Hathors say anything about getting out of that fear mode?
Well, fear is a really interesting thing in terms of the brain, because the amygdala is one of the parts of the brain that's in the more primitive structures, and its process, it's one of the things it handles and deals with primarily is the impulse for fear, because fear is related to survival. What the Hathors say is that we're being manipulated, and fear is being projected, and situations are being created that create more fear so that we can be controlled, because when that occurs, we become more irrational. We can be herded, so to speak. And what they say is that we are in a power point because of the fact that we are embodied in time and space, three-dimensional reality. We see things happening in our environment and in the political situation and the economics and maybe in our personal life that can be scary. But the Hathors say that it's not denying that reality, but it's also embracing another aspect of our consciousness, our being, which is related to the heart and higher and the higher centers, which is to be in an emotional state as much as possible where the fear is counterbalanced by something that is life-affirming. And they say the greatest thing for that, in their understanding, is what we would call appreciation or gratitude. And so as we cultivate, and they give technique, various techniques, you know, somebody's interested, they can go to the website and find them. They give techniques on sacred geometry and the emotions, but the key thing that they've been saying lately, and they started saying this 3 years ago, but now this, I've noticed every message that they bring in where they talk about the difficult passages that we are dealing with, they always bring up this tool, and the tool is very simply being able to shift into a state of gratitude and appreciation at will without having a reason to feel appreciation. You know, usually we feel appreciation or gratitude when something happens and there's a reason for it. They say that the next level of mastery that's required for the spiral up, as they call it, is being able to move into the vibrational state of appreciation or gratitude without having any reason for it. And they say that when we are in the state of appreciation or gratitude, our consciousness and our nervous systems are better able to handle what's going on and less able to be affected by fear. And another side thing, because you know my bias is brain research and neurology and science, even though I'm channeling these beings from what I call woo-woo land, it's been found that when a person is in appreciation, they're more intelligent and they make better choices. And if any of the listeners are interested in the science behind that, they can go to the HeartMath Institute website, and that they'll get a tremendous wealth of information. It's been shown that when we are angry and fearful, we literally become less intelligent. But when we experience appreciation, our brain functions at a higher level, we make better choices, and we are functionally more intelligent. Very interesting.
You know, over the last week, I've had an experience after listening to some of your sound, your CDs available that you can listen to on little pieces on the website, and I got into feeling joy, even regarding the health and everything. And Tom, I actually saw a shift, a pretty huge shift. It was almost as if I could feel the energies in the body open up in a different way. It was pretty incredible. And I was just almost, you know, crying before I went to bed going, this is incredible. And so I hope that people will also go to your website. And I think we're going to, you know, have asked you also to put this little mini CD on our website so people can feel that healing tones. But it was really amazing, and I've used it over the last week or so. Just about every other day I've remembered to do it, not necessarily, but listen to the tone because I haven't had time, but the thought process and realizing what was happening in my body when I heard the tone. So I thought that was kind of an interesting connection.
Yeah, that's really beautiful, and we get emails all the time from people who like go to the website and listen to the meditation of Archangel Gabriel, which we post for free, and we post other sound meditations for free on the website. And sound has, not just that it shifts consciousness, but it shifts our neurophysiology, and something changes in the body. The physical body is what, in what you're sensing. And so it's really, sound is a wonderful vehicle when it's used for the intention of healing, to open up spaces in the mind, consciousness, and in the physical body that relieve stress and give us insight into ourselves in different ways.
Yeah, that's exactly what I felt. I felt the stress being released in the body, and I could feel what it felt like and how the body was doing it. So I can absolutely reinvent the wheel again and bring it in each time. It was pretty sassy there to be able to have that capability.
Yeah, it's very interesting. Once a person hears the sounds and incorporates them and feels the shift, they can actually just remember the feeling and the sound.
Yeah.
It's almost like the effects of the sound are there even though the sound is not being played.
Right, yeah, that's exactly what happened, Tom.
Yeah, our neurology is an extraordinary thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you have a sound studio in your home?
Yeah, and I have a sound studio that I take around the world with me.
Do you really?
That was just from the other worlds, and Lightship were recorded in Spain and France. It's a portable digital recorder. I store it in Europe, actually, for when I go over there. And then I have another digital workstation here at home.
I remember reading somewhere on your website, in your writings, that 3 a.m. was a real special time to receive clear messages in the morning.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, does Judy ever get up and hear you singing?
Yes, she does.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was going to say, whoops. Yeah, there Tom goes again.
I think that's the time that most of us wake up, that when we receive messages.
Yeah,
it's a very interesting time. The yogis call it the hour of Brahma, because it's where the yogis say that the energy, earth energies, are the calmest. The night has happened. Dawn is not quite here, so the energies are the most quiescent during that window, 3, 4 o'clock. And, yeah, a lot of us, I notice people report to me all over the world, they're waking up around this time.
Yeah.
Now, I read somewhere on your website that have been thinking about creating, I don't know if you've started it, a crystal temple.
Sound temples.
We have
three of them. We completed the last one. One is in, crystals are involved in that. Crystals are put in the shaft that are programmed through sound. So now we're in another phase of woo-woo land. These were done at the request of the Hathors. And they are, the first one is in New Mexico. None of these are open to the public. They're in private land. One is in a jungle in Costa Rica. And one is in a monastery in Nepal at the border of Tibet.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is in New Mexico. And they are shafts filled with various types of quartz crystal that have been programmed through sound and mantra and prayer or intention. And the one near Albuquerque is 333 feet long. And the one in Costa Rica is shorter, and the one in Nepal is shorter than that, but they're all linked together energetically, and they act like acupuncture needles. And the Hathors requested that this be put in place to help with the transition that Earth and humanity would be going through in the next decade, 20 years or so.
Did you have, was it easy to find the locations?
It was actually miraculous. The one with the what started in New Mexico was they came to me 2 years before the actual construction and said, we want a sound temple. Well, the whole thing with them has been one process of them expanding my mind beyond what I wanted it to repeatedly. And in fact, I wrote a book that is a result of them. They said, started giving me this information, they said, we would like you to release this to the world in a book. And I said, there's no way I'm going to do that. I'm not going to put my hard-won academic credentials behind something like this. And I said, forget about it. And I thought it was done. And I remember I was in California, and I ran into a woman named Virginia Singh, which you probably know, a wonderful woman who had a publishing company. And I never met her before. I knew her name, but we had never met. She comes up and meets me for the first time, and she says, "Your Hathors are telling me you're to write a book." And my mouth just about fell down because I told no one. Only my wife knew about this. And I said, "Well, I'm too busy to write a book." She said, "It doesn't matter. We have a staff of transcribists. All you have to do is record it, and they'll transcribe it into a book." And I said, "Well, okay." And so that's how the Hathor material came into existence. And then shortly after the book was done, I thought, "Well, that's it. You know, I'm done. I've done." Asked what they asked me to do, and they came to me and said, "We want you to build a sound temple." And I said, "You, when you find the land, you get in touch with me." And I forgot about it. I was really busy. I'm very busy with a lot of projects. And so 2 years later or so, they came back to me and said, "Now's the time to build a sound temple." I said, "Did you get the land? Because I'm not going to go take my time." And they said, "Look on your desk under the pile of papers." And anybody who works with me calls my office the black hole, because it's just like chaos upon chaos with the papers stacked. So anyways, there underneath a stack of papers was an offer from someone who donated land. And people donated money to make the temple happen. And then there was the same thing happened in Costa Rica. And then in Nepal, there was a Buddhist monastery that asked to host the shaft, and that was an extraordinary experience. So each of them have had, out of the blue, never anticipated, never expected, and very interesting coincidences or synchronicities around them.
So were those people contacted to actually by the Hathors to do this?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, the Hathors.
And then they contacted you.
They knew me, but they were asked, never by me. They were asked by the Hathors separately.
Ooh. Wow.
And because of your incredible voice and your working with sound, I'm sure that that's why they chose to communicate with you.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it. Yep, I agree. But my range actually expanded after working with them. Before, I was a professional musician in that I put myself through college playing in bars and lounges. So, and after I graduated, I worked in you know, playing in bands and in lounges for many years until I went into psychotherapy and then into brain research, and that took all my time. But my range was about 3 octaves, and so in the time working with them, not only did they stretch my mind, they stretched literally my vocal range.
Now, when you say they stretched your mind, mm-hmm. How did that feel when they stretched your mind?
Well, I didn't like it.
Well, that's not exactly what I meant. I mean, did you get headaches when they were stretching your mind? Did you feel the action? I mean, it's like expanding to the point where you're going, how can I consume all this?
It's been the process over, I don't know, 15, 18 years now. So fortunately, rarely did I get headaches or physical contraction from this. Mostly it was that they showed me that life is much larger than I ever thought it was, and that consciousness is much more complex than I ever thought it was, and that all life is more interconnected than I ever realized or imagined, mm-hmm. and that we are affecting our future, each of us individually, by the choices we're making in our life, and the smallest moments of choice that look insignificant actually lead us to tremendous things later, good or bad, and sometimes both. And those little moments, often I'm not aware when I make the choice, oh, I'm just choosing this direction, and then later I look back and go, oh my God, that was a pivotal point in my life and I didn't even realize it. And they say the same thing is happening for our culture, for our civilization, for humanity. And we are in the middle of major choice points, planetarily speaking.
And do they say that just the way we think changes?
The way we think, the way we feel.
Mm-hmm. because I hear that message from every direction. So everybody's in the group that I travel with, it seems like we're all picking that up.
Yeah. Tom, what other languages have you put the books into?
The book has been translated, into Dutch. It's been translated into German. It's been translated into Japanese, Hungarian. It's being translated into Russian. I think that's about it.
Wow.
Do you think other countries open their arms up to this thought process more than maybe our country?
Well, Russia certainly does.
Mm-hmm.
The Russians are, it's scary how powerful they are in their psychic abilities. And we can feel when the Russians are trying to get us to come back and teach. I wouldn't say that they're more, but they are certainly as open, and they have, what I would say is that there's people all over the world that are working deeply and intently as they can to better themselves and humanity, and that's very gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I hear things, because I've traveled around the world so much doing this work, I have friends now in countries that I hear, where there are distressing things going on, and I have faces. They're not just faceless people, they're faces, and I know about their lives, and we are in an immense, I don't even know how to describe it. It's like our reality as we know it is morphing and changing right before our eyes. We're witnessing something that is extraordinary, and of course when that happens, it's scary because we're stepping into something new, a new territory that we haven't been before. But it's actually a tremendous opportunity if we can shift our thinking and our feeling so that we can go through the passage and embrace it instead of retract from it. And people around the world in all the communities where I've taught are doing their version of that. So there is an interconnected family of individuals, and we don't even know each other's names, and we'll never even meet. But I can assure everyone that they're all over the world, and they are holding a higher vision for humanity, and I think that's what will carry us through.
That's what I think also. And the more people that jump aboard in this way of thinking, the faster the change will happen, or the vibration will change quicker.
It might. I don't actually know. I think that's true. But time will tell, exactly how this comes down. I think that the more people who become unhypnotized by the lies that are being told to us about what's going on and what our limitations are and what our potentials are, when people embrace a higher vision of themselves and of their local community, and they are expressing that in their work and their relationships, that will change society, and that will change, according to the Hathors, and I do believe this is true, will change our destiny.
Mm.
Even in the 12th hour, even as things look like they are falling apart, we can walk right through the eye of the needle. And the more people who hold that vision, and as you said, begin to think that way, I think it will tip the scales, yes.
Tom, I kind of wonder if the CD or the transformational music called Immunity. Just reading that alone, and then what I experienced from your music, it looks like, it feels like within the body that you actually can feel what the changes are, and you can bring them back to make the changes. And I kind of wonder if this music you're making will, be out there, and it'll be in the ethers, and it will just give the people the know-how when the time is needed.
Okay, so
that was
the short answer is yes. I believe that's true. The long answer is, I mean, you're asking some really deep, profound questions, and normally in interviews they skirt things, so I wasn't prepared to answer such a deep, profound question. There's two levels to what you're saying in my experience of what I'm doing in my work. And one of them is when the Hathors came to me when I was, it was my 35th birthday, and there was a whole big thing where they took me on a journey into the future, and they asked me if I would sing the song of the new earth, and I asked them what that would involve, and they said it would involve going around the world and hearing their sounds. And the sounds of a new destiny, a higher vision of humanity. And I said, well, I'm not sure I want to do that. But I wound up doing it. And I found myself in some very strange locations, one of them being 30 miles outside of Chernobyl in the Ukraine. And when I found out how close we were to Chernobyl, I was very upset. And I went to them and said, how dare you? Because I don't believe in putting these beings in a place of awe and reverence. They, in their own words, they're simply our elder brothers and sisters. They don't claim to be divinities. They simply have a different perspective on things than we do because they're outside of time and space. So I have a very direct relationship with them and sometimes irreverent. And so I went to them and said, how dare you take me and put me so close to Chernobyl? What is going on here? And their words to me were, we would have put your ass in the middle of the reactor if we could have. And the reason is because the sounds that will be brought through you will be anchored in this energy of the radioactivity for 2,000 years.
Oh.
So the sounds, this is my, we just completed our fourth trip around the world, and it's, you know, it sounds more exotic and wonderful than it is. I mean, it is wonderful to meet people and work with them, but it's very demanding physically to travel this much. But the purpose is to anchor the sounds into the earth grid. Then the other aspect of the work are the actual recordings that I make, and they are like tools that, you know, I'm very appreciative to hear your feedback, because that's exactly the intent of it, which is that a person can hear these sounds, they can feel, if they're open at all, to the changes taking place in their body, in their consciousness. And then they can draw on it in the future whenever they need it without even having this, you know, the recording. If they have the recording, I think it amplifies it. But there is a point in consciousness where you do not even need to have the original stimulus that got you to a state of awareness. You just remember it and you're there. That's the beauty of human consciousness.
So
I think that's exactly what I felt. In fact, after the first listening, I went, my God, I could hardly believe what happened. And then I cut out another space of time within a half an hour so I could listen to it again. And I thought, wow, I knew what had happened. It was pretty incredible. And I just, I'm so glad other people can have a chance to be able to listen to the interview maybe that we're doing now and can do this as well. It's really tremendous what's happening.
So the sound temples that were created, does that actually magnify the sounds that you are bringing to people around the world? I mean, does that help magnify that the sounds?
Yes. When I do that phase of the work that involves those three sites, they switch on energetically and amplify the intention.
And then we're actually cleansing Mother Earth through all of this.
Yeah, we're cleansing Mother Earth, and we're cleansing ourselves. You know, Mother Earth's going to be fine. She's going to survive the Earth changes. It's the parasites, we being some of them, who might not make it through. But she will be fine. She will purify herself, and if she has to shake off, and we are become like the dinosaurs and an experiment gone awry, she will continue. So Earth is going to be fine. It's just the life as we know it may change radically, but Earth itself will be fine through all of this.
Now, were the temples in Egypt originally built for something similar to your sound temples?
Well, my feeling is yes. I don't have any substantive way that I can say, yes, you're absolutely right. But my experience of it, having been to Egypt four times now and going into these ancient temples, is that they were, some of them were anchored in such a way that their energetic was a portal between the other worlds, the different realms of vibration, and this world. And so, yes, they used a much more complex technology than the Hathors used in these sound temples, but the intention was the same, similar.
That's interesting, Paula, you asked that question. I was thinking, what happens, Tom, when you put your sound in that, inside the temples at this present time? And I'm thinking, I wonder if it might not just kind of up whatever sound was there originally, and it would grow into making a better position for sound. You know what I mean? It would just completely accelerate what's there.
You're talking about in the ancient temples in Egypt?
Yeah, yeah. I'm wondering by you putting your sound there.
Well, they are living consciousness, and it's really fascinating. On all the groups that, the first group I took there, I was not as aware of what's going on as I was with the other three, but with the last three groups, I shared with everyone my experiences that these are conscious living beings. Just like the temple sites are conscious living beings. And so if you go into one of the temples and you go into a feeling of appreciation or gratitude to the structure, something changes and the temple opens up energetically. And people
wow.
feel it. People who were not even, who come on the tours and they describe themselves as not really sensitive can feel something opening up for them. And that these ancient temples in Egypt, and it's a very strange juxtaposition of something so ancient in a modern Islamic country, because they're like a mismatch of energies. But the temples themselves are outside of time and space. And when you go into them and you're in this state where you open, it's all done through the heart, in my experience. I'm sure there are other ways to do it. I'm just sharing my experience of this. But
okay.
If I enter one of these temples, especially Dendara or Abydos, but almost any of them, and my heart, I open my heart and go into appreciation or gratitude, the temple becomes alive, and I feel like I'm outside of time and space and in time and space simultaneously. And I'm in two worlds at the same time. And all types of things happen that are semi-miraculous and otherworldly.
Well, when I went to Egypt, the first time I heard it, I thought it was our group because they did toning. I heard tones in the different temples.
Yes.
And that's the reason why I asked you that question. Cause...
Yeah, they sing.
Mm-hmm. So it's the tones that have been there throughout the years.
Wow. You have a CD or MP3? That's available. It's called the Kala Chakra of Great Compassion.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that comes out of the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. And I've been a student of comparative alchemy and traditions for altering consciousness since I was like 18. And I became very interested in Tibetan Buddhism and was initiated into several lineages. But what this particular CD is about is joining something called Kala Chakra. And Kala Chakra means the union of opposites. So, and if you look at the symbolism, it's usually a male and female in sexual embrace. And what it's saying is that when you bring two opposites together, there's a tremendous creative potency that's available. And so the art of Kala Chakra is knowing when to bring opposites together to create a burst forward. So interestingly enough, when you look at what's going on in the world right now, we have a juxtaposition of opposites. we have forces that want to contain the human spirit, and we have forces that want to liberate, that want to open the heart. We have other forces that want to close the heart. This is a very intense time to live in, but if we survive it, it's a very powerful time to be living because we are in Kala Chakra. We're actually in the process of unification of opposites at the planetary level, politically, economically. But what the meditation is the union of two Tibetan tutelary deities known as Jinrezi, the Buddha of Infinite Compassion, and Tara, the Bodhisattva of Infinite Compassion. And it's done in the heart center, and it's a tantric ritual that you do internally. And what it does is to emit light, luminosity from your Buddha nature called Bodhicitta, and compassion into the world. The purpose is that a person, whenever they do this meditation, can consciously emanate luminosity and compassion to all sentient beings at this very critical time that we are in. So that's what essentially that CD is about, that recording.
So I would say, as many people that's listening to our show should meditate with that. It will really help the change that's coming about be a smoother shift.
Yeah, well, I do feel, however a person does it, whether they do it through the Kala Chakra, Tibetan Buddhist, or they do it through another spiritual system, whatever a person does to send forward in themselves the feeling of compassion for themselves and compassion for other beings, that's going to help things because it's an antidote to the poison of hatred and fear that is being just pumped into the atmosphere left and right.
Yeah. Would you say that's being done consciously or unconsciously? I mean, are the people that are doing that, are they consciously putting in the fear and the hatred to be able...
Well, I think it's both conscious and unconscious. Some are unconsciously doing it. I find myself sometimes getting so upset at what's going on, I find, I'm tipping the scales. I remember there was a wonderful interview with a monk that survived the Chinese overtaking of Tibet, and he was in prison for many years and beaten, and after he was released, someone asked him what was the most dangerous time for him in all of this, and he said, when I began to hate my captors. And so what he was coming from was the recognition that no matter what happens in a situation, how he internalized it would free him or imprison him. It wasn't so much what was happening as what he did internally. And so he unconsciously started to hate these people that were hurting him. And he caught it because of his training and his evolution, and he stopped it. But he recognized that was a dangerous place. That's where he almost lost. That was the most dangerous place for him in terms of consciousness. So I think that many of us get, and me included, what's happening is so visceral that sometimes we go into hatred and fear, and it's unconscious. And then I think there's another level that's going on, and this is what the Hathors address. And they say that they're actually at the upper echelon, so to speak, of the powers that are controlling and manipulating the political, economic situations. These beings are not seen. They are hidden for the most part. People don't even know who they are. And fear and hatred is being purposely amplified in order to control and contain human consciousness and the human spirit. And we are at a point where there is literally a tug of war between the freedom of the human spirit and the freedom of the human heart and the imprisonment of the human heart and spirit, and that will, where it goes, will determine our destiny. We're right in the choice points. It's a very powerful time.
I feel like if we buy into the fear and the hate, we become slaves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, we have to be aware also of what's happening in the world. There's a very fine line. And for me, I have difficulties with those who say that there is only goodness. And they refuse to look at the things that are bad that are happening. They look the other way and they pretend that they're not happening because that's how they have their island of serenity. And I think that's delusion, and that's probably just because, you know, I was worked as a psychotherapist for so long that I kind of look at things through these filters. I think the more resourceful thing state is to be aware of what's going on with open eyes so that we see the manipulation and the lies and we know where to step to avoid a situation, but not step into the limited thinking that's being projected or the fear and keep in a higher vibration in terms of our emotions and more possibility in terms of our thinking. And then we can be in both worlds at the same time. We can be in what the Chinese call transformation. They have two ideograms, and one means danger and the other means opportunity. Hmm. So when we're in the midst of transformation, which we are in collectively and individually, there are real dangers, but there are also opportunities. And if we don't pay attention to the dangers and just think they're opportunities, then we will sometimes step in the wrong place at the wrong time because we were not paying attention to the danger. But if we just pay attention to the danger and not to the opportunities for new ways of viewing things and visioning ourselves and our future, then we will be imprisoned by the danger, by the fear and the situation. So I think it's most resourceful to be aware of both
I know there's many people out there, they say, I don't turn TV on, I don't watch the news. And I think to myself, you need to be able to know which way, just like you said, which way to step.
Well, you know, it's very interesting that I do a lot of work in Germany, and these are extraordinary people, and they are deeply committed to this work. And the conversations that I've had with my German friends and Austrian friends that have become my friends over the last few years since working there, our conversations sometimes talk about turn to Hitler and World War II. And there's a tremendous sense in Germany and Austria and where the Nazi Party was such a big impact on their history and humanity, that how did this happen? How could this have possibly occurred? And they are the second generation that had inherited this state. And at one point, this was about a year ago, and I was in Germany, and the conversation came up again, and someone had just come back from the United States, and they said, you know, it's very strange, but the feeling I get in the United States is the same feeling that was present just before Hitler came in and created a fascist state. So that was a very shocking statement. And part of what happens is that we have to be vigilant in how we view the situations so that we can make the right choices for ourselves and for our society. And pretending that a situation is not happening doesn't make it go away. That's I call it the Merlin phenomenon. I used to have a giant dog that was, he was like 6 feet from head to snout. He weighed 165 pounds. And he loved to sit on the couch. But he had a very bad odor when he didn't get bathed regularly, and so we would tell him he couldn't sit on the couch. And so he would sneak up on the couch backwards and look away from us because he believed that if he didn't see us, we couldn't see him. But it was like this mammalian thing. It was like an ostrich. So we would say, Merlin, stop it, because we called him Merlin. And he would look at us with like this shock, like, how did you see me? So I think there's that thing in our mammalian psychology, neurology, that of denial, that believes somehow if we don't look at the situation won't affect us. So if the situation gets really bad, we'll just pretend it's not happening. We'll look someplace else, and then we won't be negatively affected by the situation. And that's just plain delusion. That's not helpful. That's not spiritual mastery in my book. We need to mm-hmm. be aware of what's going on in the world, but not buy into the fear and the manipulation to take a higher step in ourselves.
And I think the people in this in our country don't want to look how other countries, how they look at us, or how they are a little bit different than we are. It's almost, to me, like people in this country think that the way we live is the only way.
Well, yeah, that's very true. And, you know, every country has its own myth about who it is in the world. And one of the myths that we have in our country is that we're the good guys and everything we do is good. And when you're outside of the U.S. and you're traveling around, you see that that's not necessarily always the case. I think that American people are, for the most part, are well-intentioned, and we've shown that historically. But the actions of our government sometimes are not. And we are viewed very differently outside the world by other countries that we visit anyways than we view ourselves. Very, very differently.
And I hear quite a bit from people in other countries, well, we like the people.
Yes, right.
But not the government.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us where you're going right now so people will know your next schedule and maybe they can hop on there? Everyone has access to our computer.
Well, if they go to the website, www.tomkenyon.com, that calendar is, you know, it's all constantly changing.
Okay.
I have an intensive where the last Hathor event, the only Hathor event this year in the United States is like next weekend in Seattle. And
are you fully booked?
No, there's still some space just because we have a very large venue. But there's something like 400 people coming, and I think there's room for a few more people because of the size of the ballroom. The next event is has a long waiting list, and that's a meditation retreat. And then that's all that's happening this year, and then next year we'll be in Europe and Asia, and we haven't actually solidified when we're going to be back in the U.S., so that decision will probably be made around, you know, November or December.
Do the Hathors sometimes surprise you by changing your schedule or asking you to change it?
Yes, they have several times.
So that means you have to be pretty well flexible.
Yeah, I have to be very flexible. You know, it's very strange to make plans for the future because the future is changing so much.
I know.
You don't know from one week to the next what situations are going to be like. So they laughingly say, well, go ahead and plan out your calendar and just realize you might not be able to get to where you're planning to go, or it may happen.
Well, we have someone that's been listening that I'm going to just say, Peggy Black has been listening to our show today. So if you want to hop aboard, Peggy, and say hi to Tom.
Well, Tom, it's such a pleasure to hear your voice again.
Yeah, it's good to hear you again, too.
Yeah, I'm looking forward. I get to be up there in Seattle as well on Orcas, so my upstairs is filled with luggage and all kinds of stuff getting ready.
Well, Tom, on your newsletter, is that always updated every month, or what takes place on that?
Well, the newsletter says an occasional psycho-spiritual inquiry, and we have occasional, like...
Peggy, we can hear you breathing.
Oh, okay.
So we put out the newsletter when Judy and I started publishing it, we agreed the only time we'll publish it is when it's joyful. So we have no timelines. That's why we put an occasional.
Okay.
And so we don't have anything new. We have articles that are being written, but I don't know when that will appear. But when it happens, it's posted on the website, and in the past, it's been printed, and it's getting mailed to people who you know, leave their contact information on the website and want to get updates of what we do, and we give it as a gift to the world. We don't charge for it. But it's done when it's joyful and when there's time and space for it. So I, looking at everything that's going on, it probably won't be until sometime next year, maybe spring, before the next one comes out.
I know with your tight schedule, it would be hard to squeeze in a newsletter in there also.
Wow.
Yeah, usually
well,
we
the
do
website
the writing
is,
in Europe. Do what?
The website is tomkenyon.com, and that's T-O-M for Tom, and Kenyon is K-E-N-Y-O-N.com if anybody wants to head there. And look at everything. It's,
oh, I know.
It's so exciting. I mean, it talks about his books and the CDs and the MP3s that are available. The listen to the sounds of Archangel Raphael,
and then also for the your listeners who are scientifically inclined, in the menu bar there's something that says acoustic brain research, and they can click on that and go into the scientific part of all this. And some people would prefer that than some of the
good.
Others.
Now you mentioned HeartMath earlier. Do you work with the HeartMath group?
No, it's just I follow the research for many years, and they are doing some very, very good work. There's, if someone's interested in the science of this, another resource I suggest in addition to them is Dan Winter, and it's called the Implosion Group, and he has a very different take on things than the HeartMath Institute, and disagrees on some things that they say, but he has some very progressive research. And so as somebody scientifically oriented, those two resources would take them into some very interesting material.
Now, I just have one little quick question before. When people are, do you do any therapy sessions any longer?
Only group therapy.
Okay. I was just wondering, when you did the therapy on one-to-one, did you actually have little probes on someone when you would do the toning and you could see the changes?
Most of that was done, a little bit was done in live sessions. Most of it was done with recorded sounds, and then the recordings were sent to an independent lab because most of the research was done independently. And then they would play the recordings to subjects and then do the so I didn't do the actual intake of the data because I wanted to keep that. Well, for one thing, I don't like that part of the research. It's I prefer to have somebody else do it. But also for the sake of the clarity of the research, I was not involved in the collection of the data. It was done independently.
Is there anything that we haven't touched upon, Tom, that you really want to talk about? We've probably got about a couple more minutes.
Yes. We have 1 minute.
Okay. Well, I just feel very aligned with what the Hathors, whatever their ultimate nature is about. Their view about our potential, I do feel aligned with, and that's that we are creator beings, and we are asleep and collectively, and we're not recognizing that we create our reality and our destiny every moment of our lives, and that this is a time, for whatever many reasons, where the lid is being taken off or the veils are being separated and more opportunities are presenting themselves for us all to wake up more and to recognize that we are creating our lives every moment by the choices we make on the smallest things in our lives. We're creating our future. And we do that individually, and we're doing that collectively as humanity. And that even though these are very difficult and challenging times, it's also an extraordinary gift to be alive at this time if we embrace the higher level of our potential. Then we can move through this with more grace and more humor and get a tremendous benefit for ourselves in terms of our spiritual evolution for being in this time. And I think the greatest ally in all of this is to have a good sense of humor. I think that we need to laugh a lot.
I agree.
That's what I would say.
God bless you and your wife on your journeys. And thank you for spending time with us today. We really
do. Pleasure. It's really a pleasure to have such questions.
Oh, we enjoyed our interview also with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
And a rest. Have a good rest. I know you've been traveling a lot.
Yeah.
So say hi to Judy for us.
I will.
All right. Thank you.